This is MMA Torch editor Jamie Penick, and this is the Daily Audio Update for Tuesday, October 28th, 2008. I'm joined today by Torch columnist Jason Bent and Torch senior columnist Sean Ennis for a look back at last Saturday's UFC 90 from Chicago, Illinois. Guys, we talked about what the stories were going to be on Friday night coming into this show, and, you know, we couldn't have been more right about Shirk and Griffin going the distance. Those two are very clear-cut in what they do. Neither of them is going to give up. I think all of us were expecting more of a ground effort of this first opening fight, but instead we got quite a stand-up battle between two top lightweights, and you know, this is just great fight and great start to the night of fights with Griffin coming out to Eye of the Tiger to just get you amped for a night of fights. And you know, I went over this myself on my audio on Sunday, but I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on our opening fight here and how you think it measures up to other fights that we've seen so far this year. Sean, let's start with you.
I thought it was a great fight. You know, very enjoyable. You know, both guys have gas tanks that can go all night. You know, Shirk's probably a little bit, you know, probably got a little bit better cardio than Griffin. But, you know, it was, the nice thing was, a lot of times you get these wrestlers, these grapplers that are pretty equal in talent on the ground, and they start, you know, they get into a kickboxing match and it just looks sloppy. But they actually had pretty good stand-up for, you know, both of them did. And I do, you know, I got this one wrong. I had Griffin outworking Shirk on the feet. And, you know, Shirk was able to outwork Griffin on the feet, you know, landed better shots and everything. So it was, but it was a really enjoyable fight to watch. And I think as far as fights of the year go, I think it's at least top 10, maybe, you know, six, seven, something like that. But it's up there. It's up there for sure.
Definitely. It is up. It was up there for me as well. Jason, what were you thinking on how this started off our night?
Well, I mean, coming out to Eye of the Tiger is fantastic. Get rid of the gladiator sequence and just, you know, film the guys Rocky style, you know, pound them on the sides of the beef. This was amazing. It pumped you up for the fight. For an opening fight, this was just jaw-dropping. You know, maybe I'm a little biased because we're still so soon afterwards, but I rank it in the top five fights of the year. Sean Shirk just outworked Tyson Griffin. Griffin is not that far outside of that top tier. Sean Shirk is definitely still that level of a fighter. He just outworked him, and he looked really good. This is a very, very watchable, very exciting Sean Shirk that I think he's got a new wrinkle. I think he's a little more dangerous now. I was just impressed overall, completely impressed by Tyson Griffin. I don't think this does anything to slow him down, but I think he just ran into an opponent that right now had way too much to prove and just came out of the gates with just everything he had. So I think Shirk is still at the top, and Tyson Griffin is just walking around the outside and ready to join in. But this was an amazing fight to open the card with. I had Shirk winning the decision, running away. I didn't have it 30-27. I did have it 29-28, but it was clearly a win for Shirk, and it was a great fight to watch.
Well, yeah, you can make a definite case for Griffin winning round three, but there was no way he took either of the first two. But then, like you said, you see how Sean Shirk is still up there in the top tier of lightweights, and I think that's the thing that bugs me most about BJ Penn so insistent on this fight with GSP. Instead of taking out the competition in the lightweight division and taking on the deep division that he's in, that he's the champion of, I mean, he could be the Anderson Silva of the lightweight division. He's just choosing to step up and take a different fight. And it just, there's something in that is inherently wrong right now. And I mean, don't get me wrong. I really want to see the BJ Penn GSP fight. I think it'll be a great fight. It just bugs me that he's not bothering to take on the rest of the competition. Next up we get the shocker of the night, by far. You know, I mentioned on Friday that, you know, if I were a betting man, I'd I'd almost consider putting something on Dos Santos with the line the way it was. And guys, I'd say that's how you make a debut. That's the splash that you make to announce your arrival into any whatever scene it is that you're coming into. He came in here and got himself a highlight reel knockout over probably the third best, well, possibly, conceivably before this fight, you could have put him at third best heavyweight, kept out of that four-man title tournament. Jason, your thoughts on Junior Dos Santos knocking out Fabricio Werdum?
He kicked down the door, he made a big noise, and everybody's looking over to see what it was. Werdum came in way too heavy, out of shape, unmotivated, and I wish I'd taken your lead and, you know, maybe taken a chance and thrown some money on him. It just looks like a clear case of falling apart after being snubbed, you know, by the heavyweight tournament. It should have been a showcase fight. Instead, it shows you that on any given day, you can get caught, and he got caught. But I don't think it's necessarily as shocking as we view it, because Dos Santos, he could just very well be the real deal. I just didn't know enough about him going into this fight. He could, you know, continue and just go on his way to becoming a great heavyweight, but Werdum looked like he had all the tools, and he just got throttled. That uppercut was vicious. I mean, a minute, 20 seconds, this was just a lot of weight. It just looked like Buster Douglas after he beat Tyson, packing on the pounds, very lazy, and he got caught. And right now, if you can't come in motivated enough for this fight, you're definitely out of the loop for the heavyweight tournament, and he's been passed by very much so.
Now, Sean, I know you caught this late that night because you were too busy celebrating your Phillies victory. But what were your thoughts late at night watching this, and just how shocked were you by this knockout?
You know, it was surprising, but I wasn't, you know, as shocked as I might have been, because we talked about it on Friday. You know, how many times do we see these guys who they're taking on the UFC debut, you know, taking guys making their UFC debut? We've seen it time and time again. You've got Houston Alexander knocking out Keith Jardine. You've got Joe Lozon knocking out Jens Pulver. You've got even Goran Relic beating Wilson Gouveia. You've got, and now we've just got another one to add to the you know, to the list. You've got Dos Santos just pulverizing Werdum's nose. You know, the uppercut was crushing. You know, Werdum came in there, and again, we talked about it on Friday, how he was 20 pounds more than he usually weighs, and that's, you know, it's going to slow you down, and Dos Santos looked good, and, you know, Werdum paid for it, and it's something that happens over and over again, and until someone learns from it, it's going to keep happening. So that's, you know, it's surprising, but, you know, not as shocking as it might be.
I think the most shocking part was Verdum's almost, I don't know if it was lack of passion, but lack of real preparation for this fight, and to take this newcomer so lightly when he's sitting and bitching and moaning on the sidelines about not getting a heavyweight title shot over Brock Lesnar or Frank Mir.
Exactly. And if you're complaining about not getting into the tournament, then you better come out and make a statement. Instead, he's just like, I beat this guy with my eyes closed. But at this level, you can't do that.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, he paid for it. And that got us to really, if you take the main event in a bubble in and of itself, this was the disappointment of the night for me with Clemente and Gray Maynard. I just, you know, I've got no problem with ground fighting. I like good ground fighting. I just, there wasn't much actual ground fighting when Maynard took Clemente down. He had some nice slams in there and was able to take him down. But outside of that, I mean, all we had in this fight was listening to that official tell him to move and to do something. And that was annoying as hell and ridiculous. Jason, I know you ranted about it quite vociferously in your last review of this show, but in and of itself, the fight just, it didn't click for me. I thought it was kind of disappointing with the expectations coming in for it. Jason, I know you liked it a little bit more than some of us did. So what were your thoughts on this fight?
I enjoyed the fight, but it failed to meet my expectations. And quite frankly, maybe I was expecting so much that I was kind of making excuses for it being so lackluster of a fight. Maynard had some great-looking slams. I mean, Matt Hughes-style slams. But the two of them on the ground were kind of like the teenage boy in the backseat finding his way in the dark. They just weren't sure where to put it or where to go, and it was very sloppy. But they were constantly progressing, and I have a huge problem with Fredrickson constantly telling the fighters to do something when it just appears to me that he's reacting to the boos from the crowd, which, you know, reeks of the Elite XC events, where it's like as soon as the crowd gets a little unhappy, the referee feels the pressure of being the third man in the ring. And I think subconsciously, it's like they're being booed as well. So, it's, you know, come on, guys, let's go. Let's fight. Let's move. Let's do something. And I just think that just has got to go away. They've got to have meetings with these guys and, you know, realize that the fans are going to boo some fights because, I mean, there are some really, really ugly NFL games. There are some horrible NFL games where the fans are just unhappy, and it's a 9-6 win, but these things are going to happen. This was not a crowd-pleasing fight. It was nothing like I thought we were going to get going into it. Gray Maynard just walked away with this one, 30-27 on my card. Clemente showed nothing that I expected of him, but he had enough fire to make it somewhat competitive, even though it was just going away from Maynard. My biggest problem was the officiating, and it just got on my nerves. It felt like I was being poked by Fredrickson to do something myself. I got off the couch. I had to get up. I had to stand up myself because I was on the ground too long. I mean, it was just, I had to get up. But no, this fight was nothing like what I thought we were going to see.
And that's where I love Joe Rogan on commentary. I mean, he's willing to call out people when they're being ridiculous, and he stayed on Fredrickson and completely berated him over commentary, telling him to stand up. And, you know, for their sometimes having faults with the Rogan and Goldberg team, I mean, they're just a tremendous pair together. And I'm a big Joe Rogan fan, plain and simple, on commentary. And he knows his stuff, and he's willing to call out people when they're ridiculous. And he did it throughout this fight. Sean, where were you standing on this one?
Yeah, I'm with you guys. You know, this fight I didn't think was horrible, but it certainly wasn't good by any stretch either. You know, and the ref was intolerable, you know, the whole time telling him to stand up, or, you know, not to stand up, but to do something. And this was also the same guy that I actually just watched the Marcus Aurelio and Hermes Franca fight, and this was the same ref that ref that fight as well, and called Aurelio, gave him a warning for an illegal knee on Franca when the knee was clearly, you know, Franca was clearly on his feet when the knee came in, you know, not even close to the ground. So this guy had a rough night. And David Smith was another one, the guy that ref the Spencer Fisher Shannon Guggety fight. Fisher had a triangle choke locked in for about a minute and a half, and the ref is saying, you got to do something. Well, he's got a triangle locked in. What's he going to do? Anyway, and Rogan let them both have it, by the way, in both of those fights. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. But, yeah, the fight, you know, not much to say about it, really. Just not much to it other than Maynard controlling from start to finish. This is another guy, like, you know, Jess Koscheck came in with his wrestling, and that was all well and good, and he controlled fights. You know, Maynard, the difference being Maynard's got a gas tank. You know, Koscheck controlled the fight from start to finish with Drew Thicket, and then got choked out when he caught a knee because he was tired. And Gray Maynard, you know, just doesn't have that particular vulnerability. You know, he's going to take a few fights to get better and to develop his stand-up game a little bit and develop his strategies a little bit. You know, the problem is they've matched him up against Frankie Edgar and against Rich Clemente, which are, you know, at least, you know, top of the mid-tier guys, or at least Edgar is, and he's beaten them both. So, you know, do you let him go down in competition? I think that's pretty much the only option they have at this point. You know, you're not going to want him to fight a Kenny Florian or a Joe Stevenson, because what if he wins those fights? Then you're going to have to put him in a title shot, and, you know, while I don't think he beats BJ Penn or Sean Sherk or any of those guys, he's not ready for that kind of competition yet. So, It'll be interesting to see what they do with him. And also, speaking of the crowd, which you guys mentioned, they were horrendous all through the night. They were terrible all night long. I'm just saying.
Yeah, agreed. They really were. I mean, they started off hot with, but even in that Shirt Griffin fight, if they had 2 seconds of slowing down from the pace that they were at, people were on them. It was just ridiculous. But you mentioned Josh Koscheck there as a wrestler coming in, and you know, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I've never been a fan of Koscheck. I didn't like him on The Ultimate Fighter. You know, that's just the way his personality came off, intentionally sometimes. We've heard the stories of him acting up to be more memorable on the show. And I have a newfound respect for Josh Koscheck after Saturday night, not only from his pre-fight interviews talking about, I mean, this guy's a fighter, plain and simple. He was given an opportunity to come in and face Thiago Alves on 2 weeks' notice, and he jumped at it because that's what fighters do. And, you know, we've talked about him being a wrestler before and just really that one-dimensional part of his game. You know, his stand-up has improved. He gave Thiago some fists in this fight, and he ate a ton of punishment, especially with those nasty leg kicks and body kicks in the third round, but he almost got finished 2 or 3 times in this fight, and he survived. And you know what? You got to give him all the credit in the world for taking this fight on 2 weeks' notice and taking Thiago Alves, who behind George St. Pierre right now, and perhaps BJ Penn at 170, is probably the next best welterweight. And, you know, he did show that he was for real this night on Saturday night. Plain and simple, he showed he was for real. And, I mean, it's just a great 3-round fight from these two. And they battled to the end. And, you know, I'm really surprised that Koscheck was able to survive. Sean, what are your thoughts on this semi-main event?
Yeah, you know, I don't think there's any question at this point that Thiago Alves is number two welterweight in the world. You know, not considering BJ Penn, since he hasn't fought at welterweight in a while, or won at welterweight in a while. You know, and this is another thing about the Penn St. Pierre fight. Outside of it being a, you know, an intriguing fight, Alves deserves a title shot right now. He's won 7 fights in a row. He's finished Carl Ferris and he's finished Matt Hughes. You know, he's hot. This is when a guy deserves a title shot. But as it stands, he's going to have to fight again. You know, at least to keep fresh, and probably, you know, to keep him visible so that people remember who he is when he eventually does get the title shot.
And that's the situation that Kenny Florian's in right now at lightweight, having to fight Stevenson now in 3 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's the same kind of thing. And then what if Stevenson wins that fight? Well, he's not going to get a title shot against Penn because Penn destroyed him in the first fight. So what do you do with your lightweight contender at that point? So it's, you know, while that fight is good, I don't know that it's the best match at this point. But all that aside, Alves looked tremendous. You know, again, no questioning that he's the number one contender, number two welterweight in the world. It's going to be a number one versus number two fight when he and St. Pierre eventually do fight, if St. Pierre is still the champion at that point. But Koscheck, man, you're not kidding. Koscheck has got a hell of a chin. I mean, he took some hellacious shots and remained vertical. I mean, those were the same shots that he was hitting other guys with, and those guys were going down. And that shows, again, you know, I mentioned the Drew Fickett fight, his first fight in the UFC, where he caught that knee and then ended up getting choked out. And you can see just how far he's come. I mean, he took some shots directly on the chin and recovered really quickly. And even, you know, kept coming forward the whole fight. So Koscheck is, you know, still top 5 caliber welterweight, and he is going to be around for a long time. So it'll be really interesting to see. I mean, he's got to develop some technique with his striking. He's got the power at this point, but, you know, he's pretty predictable in what he does. So it'll be interesting to see what he is able to do in the next few years to really hone up his game a little bit. Alves, man, those leg kicks, my gosh. He was killing Koscheck with the leg kicks, and it really says something that he wasn't able to take Alves down, you know, partly due to the leg kicks, but partly due to Alves' sprawl. I mean, Koscheck took George St. Pierre down a couple of times anyway. So that's very, very impressive on Alves' part. And if anyone's got the tools to beat St. Pierre at this point in the welterweight division, I believe it's Thiago Alves. I don't know that he'll actually do it, but he's certainly capable.
Well, and that was one of the most impressive things about this fight was the fact that Alves, from the first round on, was able to defend against those takedowns, that he was able to sprawl and that he was able to keep it on his feet almost the entire fight. And, I mean, they've touted Koscheck. He's a four-time NCAA All-American. He is no slouch when it comes to wrestling, and Thiago Alves held him off. So that I thought that was one of the most impressive parts of the fight from Alves' perspective. Jason, where were you at on this one?
Koscheck won me over from start to finish. And I think if you look at the last 2 weeks, if you look at Chris Lieben and Josh Koscheck, just look at the maturation process where they've gone from boys to men since we've seen them on The Ultimate Fighter Season 1. And, I mean, the next thing I'm waiting for is to hear that Bobby Southworth is leading the Strikeforce canned food drive. I mean, these guys have just matured into men. And to look back on Lieben in the sleeping bag and Koscheck with the hose, you know, where was this? But this was great to watch. I've never been able to stand Koscheck, but I was cheering for him. I was completely cheering for him. He could have dropped in the first round. Nobody would have said a damn thing. He could have dropped, took the loss, and went and had drinks with Clay Guida for the rest of the night, just partied his ass off. But he got up, and he continued to fight, and this was just amazing to watch. Thiago Alves is way too big for anybody at 170. He's definitely packing on 20 or so. By fight time, he's way too big. He's too much. He's too strong. And I want to see him face GSP. And if you look at how the St. Pierre-Penn fight is now holding up two divisions, and it's so much worse than the whole Randy Couture thing in the heavyweight division, because now we've got a lot of great fighters that are going to be waiting in the wings and having to do something, as referee Fredrickson would say. You go ahead and do something. They're going to have to take a fight, and they're going to have to keep themselves busy. And these guys are definitely deserving of a shot. If anything, maybe match Thiago up with John Fitch. That could be one hell of a fight. Or how about, you know, let's have Fitch and Koscheck in there now. You know, let's have something. But I hope Koscheck fights again in December. I can't believe I want to see Josh Koscheck fight again. And I actually like to watch him fight. And I'm just biting my tongue because I've spent so much time and energy hating the guy that, hey, I fell in love with him in this fight. He just comes out the champion with a moral victory. Those leg kicks were sick. They gave me cramps. I woke up the next day hurting from my legs. Thiago he's a fire hydrant. This guy is packing on at least 20 pounds, and I'm really impressed. Koscheck versus Lytle was a very entertaining fight, and here we go again, taking supreme shots from a big guy. Koscheck has definitely arrived. He is on the next level, and, you know, for all the hype, and I love Chris Lieben, I'll drive the bandwagon around town, but Koscheck has become the better fighter, in my opinion, because Lieben, for how well he looked, still kind of the same old song with him. He just couldn't cut off the ring, and Koscheck has just added wrinkle after wrinkle to his game. He's not just the wrestler anymore, and he can take shots. As soon as he becomes able to deliver some shots or possibly take a guy down, it's good night. This guy is definitely a real player. This was a great fight to watch. I wanted Koscheck to win, but this was Thiago's going away, and I'm just kind of pissed right now that we can't see Alves versus GSP for some time. As much as I want to see Penn versus St. Pierre, this is holding up two belts. I mean, this is just a shame that way.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm right there with you on Koscheck, and I couldn't believe myself that I wanted to see him fight again in December so soon. So, I mean, hopefully he's medically cleared to do that, and he'll be fine with that, because that would be definitely a fight that many people want to see him rebound after this. Get your thoughts quick on the only prelim fight shown, the Talis Lytus-Drew McFedries fight, with Lytus picking up a really, really nice rear naked choke, a minute 18 into the first round. Not much to it, short and sweet to finish off the show before we get to this main event, but your thoughts on the fight, Jason?
Beautiful performance by Leitez. I mean, McFedries is no slouch at all. This just was wicked. I mean, this looked like, you know, Michael Phelps for the Rosetta Stone. This was Sal's Leitez for the rear naked choke. And this was a minute and 18 seconds, you know, trim a little bit of the fat. And it's a commercial for Leitez as much as the Affliction commercial of Sylvia versus Fedor was. This was a beautiful rear naked choke, and I'm just glad that we got a chance to see it. It was just brilliant to see. McFedries is a good guy. He's a tough fighter, but this was very impressive, and it was just a beauty to see. This was a great submission, and this was nice to have it on the main show, even though it was not on the main card.
Sean, anything else to add to that?
Yeah, pretty much as predicted. I mean, when McFedries gets matched up with somebody that's a decent ground fighter, that's just what happens. You know, he gets submitted. I think it was a good thing they got Leitez on the show as well. Although I think he's probably on a collision course with Anderson Silva at this point. He's strung together a few wins, has looked pretty good. And I think that's the good thing to come out of the debacle of the decision versus Nate Marquardt with the bogus point deduction for Marquardt. But anyway, the fact is that Leitez has strung together a few wins, probably one more, and he'll get a shot at Anderson Silva. Which is good, because it's good to have a viable contender in the 185 division. Maybe he'll fight Yushin Okami, maybe not, I don't know. But either way, if they did match up those two, that would be a pretty good number one contender match for that.
And that takes us to our main event with one of the more unfortunate finishes in quite some time, for as long as I can remember, in terms of a main event fight ending on such a disappointing level. But, you know, give Patrick Cote credit. He was in here to fight. He obviously had something going in with that knee injury. As he said, it was an old injury. But he becomes the first person in the UFC to take Anderson Silva into the third round, which is a moral victory in and of itself. Didn't last long once he got to the third round with that knee buckling and blowing out on him. But, guys, were you a bit surprised that Anderson Silva took as much time as he did in this fight? I mean, he was really, really patient in this fight. He had some really nice spurts late in the first round and then throughout, mixed in and out of the second round. But it just seemed like he was a little extra cautious in this fight as compared to what we've seen from him in his entire UFC. Sean, did you notice that?
Yeah, he was more cautious than he usually is. But at the same time, I think it speaks a little bit to what, you know, and not to quote myself, but when I was talking about in the coverage of the event, when Silva was coming to the cage, you never see Anderson Silva take anyone lightly, and you never see him have an off night. Dana White was talking about how he had an off night. He didn't have an off night. He was just, if a guy's got one weapon against you, and Cote had one weapon against Anderson Silva, what are you going to do? You're going to try to avoid that weapon. He hit Patrick Cote with some big shots. I mean, that straight hand, straight left hand that he hit Cote with was harder than the one that he hit James Irvin with. And Cote didn't wilt. So how do you react to that? You know, yes, he was cautious and he moved around a lot, but I don't understand. You know, there's a lot of Silva hate coming over the last few days, and I just don't get it. I mean, how do you fault a guy for using strategy and trying to drag out a fight a little bit? You know, he wanted to take Cote into the later rounds. Just because nobody has taken him past the second round anymore doesn't mean he's always going to knock somebody out within three. You know, I mean, yes, I thought that. He was going to knock him out within the first round, but after he hit with those shots, he realized that he was going to have to put something together. So, Cote's corner was telling him, every time he's not hitting you, he's thinking about how he's going to hit you. So that's, and Cote knew it too. And if you look at that fight, Silva didn't waste any shots. He hit him with most of what he threw, and Cote didn't hit him with anything. So, if Silva had knocked out Cote within a minute and a half of the third, would we still be hearing this? I just don't understand. We're getting all this outcry But I think it's only because Cote's knee went out. You know, if his knee hadn't gone out, who knows what would have happened. You know, Cote wouldn't have won. I know that would have happened. But, you know, who knows how Silva would have won. But, you know, it's a hard fight to not be disappointed with. I mean, obviously it's disappointing because you want to see a finish to a championship fight and to a main event. But, you know, I find it difficult to question Anderson Silva, and especially all the disrespect allegations, you know, talking about how, oh, it's a, you know, a mockery to lend him a hand to get up. Where's the precedent for that? You know, Anderson Silva has always been respectful. He's always been, you know, polite and all that kind of stuff. That's not his MO to be a jerk and to belittle guys. It's just not how he rolls. You know, so I don't get it for, you know, a lot of the reaction.
There was nothing disrespectful about Anderson Silva's performance at all. That helping him up thing, it was completely innocent. I mean, you could tell he just honestly wanted to help him up. He wasn't going to do anything there. He was offering him a hand up. It's just maybe it doesn't fit within the middle of a fight context, but yeah. It wasn't anything malicious. It wasn't anything to try to belittle him. That's just, like you said, that's not his nature. It's not what he does. And, you know, I'm not questioning Silva's strategy here, because I thought it was a good strategy. Like you said, he was connecting on his shots. He was picking his spots. And I firmly believe that had Cote's knee not gone out, it would have been late third round, early fourth round, and he would have been knocked out, because Silva was going to connect on something sooner rather than later. I mean, he was picking his spots and he was getting in there with what he needed to. And he was only getting more comfortable with Cote as he went on. Because, I mean, you just take a look at the first round and the second round. First round, about 3 minutes of not much happening. And then he comes in and lands a ton of shots, catches him with a shin right across the face that Cote survives and stays up. And then you get to the second round and, I mean, you have three or four different spots where he's throwing on punishment and doing that. And it would only been a matter of time going further into that. And it's just unfortunate. Like you said, I mean, we wouldn't be talking about this if Cote's knee didn't blow out, if the fight didn't end that way. And it's just unfortunate that it had to, especially for him. I mean, this was his big break. This is his big shot. And to have it end that way, can't even imagine the feelings on that. But Jason, where were you at on this main event and with what went down in the third round?
I mean, critiquing Anderson Silva is like carrying a can of Krylon, looking up at the Sistine Chapel and deciding you can do a better job of shading. Anderson Silva is the fastball pitcher who racks up a lot of strikeouts, and we watched him shut down the side with a three-pitch inning. He induced them all to ground out, and yet we're acting like we were cheated collectively. I don't think we were. As far as helping or offering to help Cote up, I think at that point it was a sign of ultimate respect. I think it went into, I would even go as far as to saying, a sparring mentality at that point, because it was like, you know what, you belong in this octagon with me tonight. Here, let me help you up, let's touch him up, and let's continue. I just think it was the ultimate respect. Cote gave a great showing of himself, and this was the most competitive fight Silva's had in UFC. It was still a shutout. It was going to end in the third round, or it was just going to be a five-round walkthrough. Cote's got nothing to be ashamed of, but I don't see where Silva really didn't give us his A game. Watching the fight, I was kind of worrying if maybe Silva would be off because, you know, maybe not being properly motivated for this fight based on the marquee factor of Cote. But I think after that first round, he was in this fight, and he was in this fight to win, and instead of just throwing the fastballs, he showed us he has a changeup, and I think this is a good thing. I think he fought a very smart fight instead of possibly risking something by being stupid, because everybody would be roaring if Silva would have gotten knocked out by a lucky shot. So I think this proves that he's not only the best fighter in the world, but he's a thinking man's fighter. He doesn't just go out there and try and annihilate, but he actually thinks, and he's just very efficient. Everything he throws is with accuracy and just to hit. He doesn't just throw. He doesn't waste energy. Not one single movement of his is wasted. It was a fun fight to watch. Complete shutout. I'd love to see him go at it again because you know, nobody wants a fight to end this way, but there's no way we're going to see it. The timetable for Silva is short. Dana White and the UFC need to extract as much cash as possible from Anderson Silva before he walks away, and there's just too many big-name fights. As far as the rumors of possibly a Silva versus Chuck Liddell, I don't necessarily want to see this fight. I just see Silva walking through him, but for the marquee value, for the money, it makes sense. You know, Chuck Liddell's going to be drug into the octagon for as long as he can stand up. There's many challenges left I'd like to see Silva go up against, but I don't really know if there are any challenges left for him to face. The guy really showed me in this fight that he is on that next level, and the sportsmanship he exhibited was just beyond reproach. This guy is a class act, just a classy fighter, and this was a fun main event, and it ended on a sour note that we don't want to see, but it was a dominant victory for Silva until that knee injury.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you touched on that possible Silva-Liddell fight. I'm also in the camp of not wanting to see that, more so because I really don't want to watch Chuck Liddell go down the Ken Shamrock route. And it's getting to the point where he's getting in there and he can't go like he used to, and it's very clear. I mean, he had the war with Vanderlei, but outside of that, I mean, he's lost 3 of 4 now. And that's, I mean, he's heading down a road where his prime is well past him. His game has been figured out by a few people. And he's not the Iceman of old. And, you know, it's one of those things where you don't want to watch a guy stay in too long and just go downhill with that. But guys, thanks once again for joining me here. I want to get your final thoughts on Saturday's show and see what you guys are looking forward to in the next couple of weeks as we wade the waters until UFC 91. Sean, let's start with you.
Two final thoughts. It wouldn't hurt my feelings if the UFC never went back to Chicago, number one. And number two, it's not very often that you see a fight where a guy gets congratulated for getting his head handed to him for 2 rounds and not getting knocked out. And that's what happened to Patrick Cote on Saturday.
Yeah, well said. Jason?
This whole night was just Evan Tanner tribute to me, going backwards from when Rogan announced why he's grown the beard out. It's still kind of sad that Rogan, putting his razor away, is doing more to remember Tanner than anything Dana White and the UFC have done, but this really was an Evan Tanner tribute. This was all about heart, capped off by a pretty compelling, gutsy performance in a middleweight championship bout by Patrick Cote, and just overall I come away with a good feeling that, you know what, this was the kind of fight card that wasn't Evan Tanner kind of card, so I just thought that was a cool moment at the end, and it was just a really nice thing. I really do agree with Sean. I don't want him to go back to Chicago unless I can possibly mute it and put it on closed captioned. That crowd was just beer sloshing and wanted to see some guys throw some hands. I mean, they just didn't know what they were watching. They booed every damn thing. I'm surprised they didn't just start fighting amongst themselves out of the boredom they were expressing. You know, but I thought it was a great card. Considerably better than the week before, but you know, that was a great card for free. This was well worth paying for, and we're less than a month away from the biggest show, Lesnar Couture. We're less than a month away from this, and we're coming off of a really great show. There is no down period. Everything is just going up and up, and things have been so good that we actually are risking a possible letdown with UFC 91 in a way. I don't think we can, but there is the possibility of that. We're in a great time period for the UFC right now, and we're less than a month away. It's Lesnar Couture. It's on, and I cannot wait.
Well, and don't forget, guys, we get to see Uriah Faber fight still before that fight comes up. So we've got that still on the docket. So it's nothing but good stuff coming up. And, you know, thanks again, guys, for joining me in. Enjoyed it as always, and we will talk with you soon. And we've got UFC 91 coming up, and know, less than 3 weeks now. Not even less than a month, just less than 3 weeks. It's coming upon us. So thanks again, guys, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks.